We want to take a closer look now at what might drive a person to join a racist or a white nationalist group. There are hundreds of white supremacist groups across America, as we've just heard, and no two stories are alike. But we wanted to get the perspective of one person who joined and then later left, a skinhead group. Timothy Zahl was a skinhead in and around Los Angeles for 16 years through the 80s and the 90s. He finally left when he was in his mid-30s, and today he's a speaker at the Museum of Tolerance in L.A. Timothy, welcome to The Takeaway.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Timothy, when you see those white men, those young white men lined up in khakis and white shirts holding shields with symbols on them, like everyone saw in Charlottesville, what do you see?
It reminds me of propaganda films that I've seen of the Ku Klux Klan attacking communist white workers back in the 70s. I was exposed to propaganda films of similar sort of attacks where people were actually killed. Car would pull up, they open up a trunk, they break out guns, start shooting people, and it was ha ha ha, you know, look at the enemy. So it harkens back to that for me. So it's a little bit, I don't know, traumatic, I guess, because it brings me back to those days when my perceived enemy was to be eradicated at all costs. It's sickening. But it does remind me of when I was younger and I fed off of that sort of thing, seeking attention, anger. It was a rush, you know, for me back when I was younger.
What kind of allure did a skinhead group or a white supremacist group present to you when you were that kid, and what made you want to be a part of it?
I, you know, was raised in the suburbs. My brother was shot by an African American. He survived, thankfully, but it led to a fear-based, anxious resentment towards people of color in particular. And when I got into my adolescent years, I got involved with the hardcore punk scene. And this is, you know, the late 70s, early 80s. So it wasn't like, you know, today's punk rock scene where, you know, you have Green Day and all these nice bands. I mean, it was very, very violent. And I just loved the buzz. I later got involved with organized hate groups. It was a natural sort of progression for me. We bombed Libya. I wanted to serve my country. The military wouldn't have me due to medical issues. And the next best thing was, well, I'm going to save my country, save my race by being involved with organized skinhead groups. I sought them out. I was not recruited. I recruited myself.
Is that the case with most similar young men, that they seek out these groups and aren't recruited? Because we've heard a lot of people talk about the recruiting methods of groups like this, where they let young men feel like they're part of something bigger than themselves, and that's a big draw.
That is a major draw. In my particular case, you know, I was actually seeking membership. You know, with the online phenomenon, that's another avenue that they can get initial exposure to the propaganda and the ideology. But the draw is, for a lot of people, at least it was for me, it was like, wow. I felt that it was, I had the weight of the white world on my shoulders. I was going to save the white race. And I really, really believed it. I believed that I was just. I believed that what I was doing was right. I was constantly preaching it. I was caught up in it. I was obsessed with it. And the good news is that quite often when a person is obsessed with something like that to the degree that they will be willing to take the life of the perceived enemy, is that one tends to burn out. Not always. Of course, there's always exceptions, but many of us former racists, we end up getting burned out. It's usually late 20s into early 30s, early to mid 30s. Parenthood often plays a role. You have moments of clarity. you have more responsibility, you start to look around, you get, at least in my case, I ended up having to travel for work and found myself in areas where I had, you know, in the past, I'm not going there without a machine gun, you know, and I was treated with respect by people from different ethnicities.
I wonder if you've ever had occasion to meet someone you may have hurt in your more violent days, and if you've ever made a reconciliation.
Yes, I have. While working at the Museum of Tolerances, I was about 5 years in to my time there, and I'm still there today. I was very odd, wasn't expecting it, ended up meeting a young man who's we had crossed paths in our past when I was 17 years old, before I was even involved with organized hate groups. Me and some friends kicked and punched a young gay man in an alley in Hollywood. And 26 years afterwards, this man ends up working at the Museum of Tolerance. His name was Matthew Boger. And we've worked together. We don't work together as much these days, but we still are friends. And we both have a common mission to spread compassion and love and to let people know that forgiveness is possible. At the end of the day, we need to come together as people.
If you had been in Charlottesville over the weekend as the rally was forming and you could have pulled aside one guy from a racist group who was out there, what would you have said to him?
I would have said, wake up. You're a pawn. You're being used. No one's going to pay for your bail. No one's going to pay for your family to put food on your family's table when you're in jail. You're being used.
Timothy Zoll, thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
Timothy Zoll was a skinhead through the 80s and early 90s. Today, he's a speaker at the Museum of Tolerance in Los Angeles.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.